listening to Just Ask Malia with Malia Horde of the Malia Realty Group in Lexington, Kentucky.
Hey, everybody. It's Malia, and we are down at the Bourbon Table here at Lex Connect with a very, very special guest who, if I'm just going to warn everybody, get the tissues out. This is probably one of the most heartwarming, heart-gutting stories of our community that has just done so much good, not only for Kentucky, but really for the nation, for children that experience cancer, because cancer really has no rules. It doesn't discriminate. And today, our special guest is Jennifer Minear, whose son, if you know, I'm sure you've heard of Jarrett Minear, who had cancer and started Jared's Joy Cart at the Children's Hospital here in Lexington. And Jared has been an inspiration story for all of us to learn from and all of us to grow from and to step back and think, what's next? So Jennifer, thank you so much for coming and joining us today. Jeffrey Shriver has told me to get you around this bourbon table, and I am so excited for everybody else to hear some of what I've heard and more.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Malia.
Oh, gosh, you bet. So I look at you and I think, wow, you are a fierce, powerful, strong woman. And you have a story of challenge, hardships, joy, and giving back in honor of Jared. Let's talk about you and Doug first. Then let's talk about Jarrett, his sister Claire, how Jarrett has changed our community, and then we'll go from there of all the good stuff that's happened since.
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to. My husband, Doug Minear, and I met, oh my goodness, in 87, I believe it was.
Gosh.
And we were both already in our careers at the time, just happened to meet. Each of us was with a friend at one of the UK basketball games, and the mobs in Rupp Arena. You can imagine you running into someone. Yes. And I did not know either he or his friend that he was with. And my friend Denise Lawless happened to come upon Mike and Doug together and said, I want to go say hi. And I saw Doug and said, well, I'm coming with you. And that was history. We met that night and talked for a while. And as we were going out of Rupp Arena in the masses of people, we ran into each other again. And so we decided to go for a drink at the Hyatt, and the rest is history. We never dated anybody else again and got married the next year and a half, got engaged that next December. And got married that June. And that will be 40 years ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a great testament.
Thank you. Yes, we've had a lot of challenges that statistically marriages are not supposed to stand up to. So
That gave me chills.
We've proven them wrong. Mm-hmm. And we're still each other's best friend, which is wonderful. It's very special.
And I want to start with you and Doug because, you know, the purpose of us having Just Ask Malia podcast is to unveil the stories within our community because it's easy to see success at success level. But most often we fail to learn from the journey that got us to success. And people that hit that success, they usually don't stop to share that because they're just looking for that next step, that next win, that next challenge to keep that going and bring others with them. Mm-hmm. And from the outside, people look at you like, wow, you're amazing. You're on these boards now and you're helping cancer and you're raising awareness and you're raising money. But to get here, it was all because of a little boy.
Yes, it was. It's very strange because I've always wanted to do things to help others, but it was nothing compared to Jarrett and his determination. From the time he was very small, 2 and a half, he was diagnosed with cancer at 2 and a half. I was 2 months pregnant with our now daughter, and was having some complications and hadn't even really officially said anything to anyone yet because of the complications. And Jarrett, literally overnight, he was the healthiest little boy going, and the next morning his leg was hurting. I got him out of bed, put him on the floor. His shin was hot, and he said it really hurt. He couldn't stand on it. So we called the pediatrician and went straight to the emergency room. And if you go into the long story, short story, try to combine those. Initially, they thought maybe it was a minor fracture. He'd been playing t-ball with his dad and the neighbors and their friends. And the first tests came back, and it's no, there's nothing fracture-wise going on. Then they were unfortunately hoping for a bone infection, which can be very serious to treat, weeks and weeks and weeks, 2 months of antibiotic, IV antibiotics, those kinds of things. And unfortunately, after a few more tests came back, we wound up being told that it looked to be a bone cancer. That was on a Sunday.
Well, let's think about that. Little Jared's 2.5 years old.
Yes.
We talked about how at 18 months, you and I, he was reading and talking in full sentences.
Yes, he was.
And just a ball of fire and not sick when everybody else's kids are off getting ear infections and sinus infections. Because we know little kids, when they're playing, they put everything in their mouth. And Jared's this bill of health.
Yes.
Until a football game where he doesn't want to walk to the car.
Exactly. And that's what's so strange. The doctors were so surprised that there weren't other symptoms that presented. And being as articulate as he was, he could talk about all kinds of things. And he was very aware of his body and things like that. And he never communicated about anything until that night before. And we took him into the hospital, had that diagnosis. Family and friends just swamped us at the hospital. The next day, on that Monday, a specialist was called in to do a bone marrow biopsy. And before he got back to the room, we had the diagnosis of Ewing sarcoma, which is a very rare bone cancer. And at that point in time, 33 years ago, we were told he was one of the youngest in the world ever diagnosed. It's typically a disease of adolescent and young adults.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so that was Monday. I can still remember sitting in the room waiting on the doctor to come back from surgery and from the biopsy and to speak with us, and we're both looking at him, trying to read his face as he's filling out some notes on the chart. And I said, this is not good. I'm looking at his face. I can tell you it's not good. And he came in and was trying to hold back tears and told us this was cancer and told us what was going on. And that one sentence, Jared has cancer,
you don't ever forget that.
Never, never, never.
It's one of those moments in life where you know exactly where you were, what you were wearing, what he was wearing.
Yes.
And it's, I mean, every parent, their dream is they're born with, you know, 5 fingers and, or 10 fingers and 10 toes and healthy and nothing that we can't protect them from. And, you know, you wonder what's God's plan for this.
Right. It was quite the challenge. And even in the midst of this, we were in the hospital from Sunday through Wednesday morning when we were sent with all of the labs and the scans, x-rays, to Mayo Clinic. During that hospitalization, and Jarrett felt fine, so he was loving all the attention and all the gifts and all of those things. He thought that was a blast. And the nurses, of course, loved him. One of the things that really sticks in my mind, my mother had called Mary Queen where we were going to church and asked them to send a priest. And Doug and I were not aware of that. And this elderly priest came, Father Lou Schmidt. I had never met him before. And he sat us down in a room and talked to us a little bit. And at that point, we were just so distracted and so overwhelmed But I still remember he took my hands in his hands and took my face. And he said, "You're not going to understand me right now, but you will through this journey. You've got to remember to look for the good in this." And at that point, I was furious. I thought, "You have no idea what this is like. You don't understand, and you're telling me to look for the good in this." But I remembered to be respectful and all of those things. And he said a few more things, and he said, on the way out, he said, "Just remember what I said." And he always checked in on us. And through those years, and still to this day, that's one of our mantras, is you've got to look for the good in this. You can't always control what happens, but you have to find some good. And I've even expanded that, as you have to spread some good some way.
And I agree with that. It's so easy to fall into the despair, the guilt, the frustration, the pain, the anger. I mean, there's a whole series of emotions when
yes. You
were given bad news, let alone when it's your child. And there is nothing worse for a parent than to feel helpless, that there's not a darn thing we can do to make this better.
And that another complicated reality was that we had just buried my father 15 months before that from a 4-year battle with cancer. And Jarrett was one of the reasons he kept hanging on, because he would wait for us to go to Louisville for me to, I would teach half days, pick up Jarrett, go to Louisville so that they could spend some time together. And he would read books to Jarrett, and they would have conversations. And Jarrett at that point was a year old. And that really helped him along, helped him try to work through some of the pain he was in. So here we were in the same situation now with a child. We hadn't known any children who had cancer. Yeah. That's just one of those things you're not exposed to, especially back then. Unfortunately, now it's more prevalent.
So you get diagnosed with Ewing's, and what is typically the prognosis or the outcome when you get told that? Is it something that's curable? Like, for people that are out there, is it curable? Because he's 2.5 and he has a relapse at age 5 and then 9, so I want to get into that. But what were you told to expect?
Well, we were told how serious this was, that Ewing's was a difficult cancer, as any of them are, but this was particularly difficult, but they were very optimistic. We were sent that Wednesday, as I say, to Mayo Clinic, and at Mayo Clinic, we walked into a room and were completely overwhelmed with a huge multidisciplinary team. We had an orthopedic oncology specialist. We had the pediatric oncologist, the pediatric nurse practitioner. We had child psychologists. We had all kinds of folks there in the room. And we hadn't experienced that before in any medical setting, even with my father.
But there was hope.
There was hope.
They gave you hope.
And they gave us the foundation of support. Not just, obviously, we had family and friends, but we were all away in Rochester, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit of ways. And that was before cell phones and all of those things. We were told by the child psychologist, we had expressed to her that our concern was obviously first and foremost Jarrett's health and well-being. But we were concerned about him changing his personality by being overwhelmed with anything and everything he could ever want. People were sending him gifts and all kinds of things just to try to, you know, give him some happiness, give him some joy. And I said, "Is this going to change him going through all of this?" And the psychologist and the other specialist said, "We can tell you right now that after 15 minutes of being with him, he's going to get you through this. He is grounded. He is an amazing child, and he will get you through this. This is not going to change him in a negative way at all."
And I think a lot of times our children do get us through situations.
Absolutely.
We always think that we're the ones to do that. And for everybody out there, there's going to be little nuggets that she's going to drop just to show the personality of Jarrett and how special he really was. Because you get through that, and at age 5, he has this huge relapse, and you guys have to go off to Seattle.
Yes. Originally, it was found in his lower right leg, and at Mayo, he had a through-the-knee amputation. That was, then you go through the process of getting used to a prosthesis, working with the amazing people back here in Lexington at Integrity Prosthetics, who are still like family. And that was an unbelievable learning curve, and also had a lot of baggage with it in terms of other people's level of comfort. He never missed a beat with that. Even at camp before he was 9, he did the rock climbing wall with his prosthesis, and then at one time it managed to drop off and he kept going until he finished to ring the bell. He would scuba dive, he would zip line, nothing stopped him. That was a minor thing for us, was relatively speaking. And at 9, when we found a spot on his head, on the top of his head, we went through initial testing and then were sent to the Hutchinson Institute, the Fred Hutchinson Institute in Seattle. And they looked at a stem cell transplant, which took months and months of back and forth to be able to go through the testing, to follow up with the stem cell harvesting. He received his own stem cells back and then go back for the actual transplant treatment and transplant. So we spent a lot of time in Seattle staying at an apartment complex that was focused on the families.
So I'm going to recap it for everybody. So at 2.5, he's diagnosed with Ewing's bone cancer. At 5, he has his first relapse, big relapse. And then at 9, he's diagnosed with the myelodysplasia. And you guys go out to the Fred Hutchinson's Cancer Institute.
Yep. Well, that was at 5. I'm sorry. Timing is crazy.
Yes. So for a little boy going through all of this, but the best stuff is yet to come.
Yes.
Because now you've been dealing with Children's Hospital, you've dealt with Mayo, now you're dealing with the Fred Hutchinson's Cancer Center. So for anybody out there, I mean, people come from all over the world to go there to be treated. And now he's back in Lexington and starts.
Yes, things were wonderful for a while. And then at age 9, we noticed that he was starting to get bruises. He was very tired, which was very unlike him, no matter what. And they ran some tests and found at that point he had myelodysplasia, which is a precancerous condition. And in his case, it was caused by all of the chemotherapy and radiation that he'd already received. And at that time, the only treatment, successful treatment, was a donor bone marrow transplant. Our daughter at that point was 6, and Claire has some challenges, intellectual challenges. She's on the spectrum. She has ADHD and other things, but she is a fierce, incredibly hearted young lady. And she overheard Doug and I talking one night about this is the only thing that we can do. But Claire's a perfect match, but we just can't put her through that. And she happened to hear us. She was at the top of the steps and we were in the kitchen and we did not know that. And she came downstairs. She would always call him Buzzy, my Buzzy. And she came down and she said, I heard what you said. And if it's going to help my Buzzy, I'm going to do it. And we just looked at her and said, now this is what it means. We went through explaining to her that this is not an operation, but it is a procedure that you would have to be put to sleep for a while, those kinds of things. And thankfully, she had grown up literally around Kentucky Children's Hospital and in the pediatric oncology clinic. And she felt like those people were going to take care of her, just like Jarrett did.
So here's a 6-year-old going through a bone marrow, and it's very painful.
Yes.
I hear it's very painful. I don't know personally, but to have the courage. So that minor courage is really in there. That strength, that fierceness is like embedded in all of you.
Yes, it is.
How long did the bone marrow transplant help Jarrett?
That was...
Because he's nine, right. Claire six.
Right. He was actually cured of the myelodysplasia. It was a 100% successful transplant. And that took some months to have all the definitive testing. The sad part is it did not help the Ewings, but it did take care of the myelodysplasia. During that time in the hospital, he was actually one of the last children to receive a bone marrow transplant at Markey, which is obviously attached to the UK healthcare. And he was talking about how he was worried about all the kids down the hall at the hospital. At one point during that 38 days, he was literally closed in his room, could not leave the door for 38 days. So there was a lot of, when he was able to talk, when he felt well enough to talk, we did a lot of talking, and he would think about things or he would write things. And one of the days I went down the hall to grab a cup of coffee and came back, and he said, "Mom, I've been thinking." And whenever he said that, I always knew there was something in it for me or for Doug and I that was going to require work. And I said, "Okay, what's going on?" He said, "I want to do something for the kids in the children's hospital to give them something to look forward to, except it's going to have to be big."
And this is a 9-year-old.
Yes.
That's just gone through a bone marrow transplant.
And several days before had literally almost died.
Yeah. And he is thinking about others. Okay, folks, anyone listening to that, think about the day you're having today and think about what you're thinking about that. If it's a challenge and thinking, "Oh, I wish I had this," or "I wish I had that." On your worst day, are you thinking about how you're going to give back to somebody else? Because this little 9-year-old did, and we can learn a lot from Jarrett.
Right. He would be asked, you know, "Why do you do this?" He said, "I do it to spread joy, but I also do it because the best way to help myself feel better is to help others." And typically, especially adults, they draw within, inward, when they don't feel well, when they're overwhelmed, when things aren't going well, they withdraw. And he said, "The way that I help myself is I do something for someone else." That's not something you teach.
That's not something innately. He's a special kid.
Yeah. Always did that. He was always worried about the kids down the hall. "How are you feeling?" He would ask the parents, "How are you dealing with this?" One of his became a buddy of his, a young man who at that point was 13, was diagnosed with Ewing's, and unfortunately his had metastasized and spread throughout his body at diagnosis. And he was from a very rural place in eastern Kentucky, and the nurses had asked his mom if it was okay if they sent Jarrett down to talk to him, because he was in a terrible depression, wouldn't do anything. They couldn't get him active at all. Jarrett went down and started talking to him. And Jarrett was always very small. He never grew past 49 and a half inches. And he was 49 and a half inches, pounds rather, also. So he was tiny and had this little squeaky voice. And Jarrett took the video gaming system in there with him, rolled it in, pulled a chair up, sat down. And he said, "Come on, let's play some video games." And he said, "I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to do it. Just leave me alone." And the infamous words came out, "CB, you're not dead yet. Get your video controller and let's play some video games."
Aww.
And they were best buds from then on.
So he told you he wanted to do something.
Yes.
How did Jarrett's joy cart start? Because it started then.
Right.
With that statement.
Yes.
Did he have it all lined out? Tell people,
it was a fun process. We thought, you know, he's 9 years old. This will be a couple of months. We'll help him through this process, and then he'll move on to something else.
Did he have that idea when he said, "I want to do something"?
He had, when he was in Seattle in the hospital for his first transplant, they had what they call the pink ladies, the volunteers in their little pink vests that would come around with a toy cart. They had little bitty trinkets, like little almost dollar store items, and they came around once a week on Thursdays, and he just loved it. Now, mind you, he had people shipping him presents, our family and friends. He had more gifts shipped to him than you could ever imagine. It was hundreds and hundreds of dollars to ship things back home when we were able to return back to Lexington. But he said, I want to do something like the Pink Ladies do, but it's got to be bigger and better. I said, okay. So the discussion was, and I'm a former educator. At that point, I was still teaching. And I said, okay, here's the deal. You're not able to go back to school for probably 3 months. So if you're going to do this, you're going to set up a business plan.
Now, this is the teacher, everybody. Mama is a teacher.
Yeah. And the 9-year-old.
She was teaching at Dunbar when Jared first got diagnosed. So see how all these skills come back.
Yes. So we said, okay, here's the thing. I said, here's what a goal is. He said, I know what a goal is. Okay. Write your goal out for what you want to do, and then we're going to have objectives and who you want to contact. He had been something of a representative unofficially for the Lexington Dream Factory. The wonderful people there had given him his dream before he went to Seattle, and he got a Sega Game Gear, if those of you who remember those. And he had a Sega Game Gear, and he got a color printer. That was a big thing back then. We had a dot matrix printer. That's how old back in the day. He got a color printer and a Sega Game Gear and videos for his sister and all kinds of games. Also, when we went to Seattle, he had his birthday, his 6th birthday, and he wrote a letter to the Dream Factory, and he sent back some of the money that he received for his birthday and sent it back saying, I want to give this for another child to get to have a dream. So they connected with him, and no child had done that at that point, and he was their unofficial representative and would do news stories for them and all kinds of things, was a special guest at their events. So he knew some people in the community who had connections. He started calling them. He made his plan. He met with the then director of philanthropy at the Kentucky Children's Hospital. The famous quote, I want as few adults involved as possible, because when you get adults involved, you get too much red tape, you get too many meetings, and you forget the focus of what you're doing.
What a brilliant child. I mean, such clarity at such a young age. And is that not true? My husband always says, you guys are always in meetings. There's always trainings. I mean, I think sometimes we get so distracted with our goals and the focus.
And the roadblocks.
And of what we really want to accomplish by too many meetings, too much red tape, and just avoiding getting into action.
Exactly.
So he meets with the director of philanthropy. He has his plan. How long did it start to get this joy cart?
A couple of months. And our then friend through the Dream Factory, or now friend, through the Dream Factory, Ralph Coldarn, who had helped create the Kentucky Children's Hospital.
I love Ralph.
Yes. He helped create the Dream Factory. He helped create Kentucky Children's Hospital and many other things. He made an arrangement for Jarrett to make a presentation to the board of the Kentucky Children's Hospital. We get him all dressed up. He's got his goals and his objectives and his plans, and I take him to the hospital for the meeting, and they open the door and call him in, and I get up, and he looks at me, and he says, no, Mom, this is mine. You just stay right here, and I'll tell you how it goes after I get out. And
unbelievable.
It was... I just couldn't stop laughing, and I was and also horrified at the same time, wondering what was going to come out. But he evidently had a successful meeting. Not long after that, it was March, and the marketing director for the Children's Hospital had sent out invitations and a press release for a ribbon cutting on Jarrett's Joy Cart, and what the plan was, and he would be going each week, pushing his cart, visiting all the children at the Children's Hospital, 0 to 18. And it was obviously in March. We all know what happens in March, usually anyway, is the UK basketball. So the director said, I can't guarantee you anybody will show up. We wound up opening the door, and there was an entire room of newspapers, radio, TV stations. Everybody was there. And from that day forward, we have never looked back.
So here's a 9-year-old boy that had an idea that he wanted to give back because when he gave, it helped him feel better. Yep. And he sets goals, he sets activities, he reaches out to people just through the course of his sickness that he's met. And then he goes, does this presentation, and now he's in a room full of newscasters, TVs, radio, you name it.
Didn't miss a beat.
And didn't miss a beat. And here we are 25 years later, and it's magnified. And I really want to get into that because there's so much good that he has done for people.
Yes.
And it's still going. So he's 9. You start the cart. Donations pour in.
The odd thing is that we never had to start calling and begging people, please help, please help, please donate money so we can buy toys, or please donate toys. People would hear about the story. Then he was on local television with all the local people you would think of, became dear friends, Jennifer Nine Palumbo, oh, and yeah, Marvin Bartlett and Deanne Stevens and all kinds of people. He was dear friends with all of them. They would do stories on him regularly. He would also appear at the Relay for Life every year, the Cancer Relay for Life, and be a guest speaker there. Met many more people there. One of the folks who worked with Marvin Bartlett had sent one of the interview tapes to Rosie O'Donnell's show, and one of their producers saw it, and immediately we get a call. Oddly enough, it was the day after we took him to the Indian Summer Camp, Kids Cancer Alliance now camp, which was the week he lived for every year. That was his week to be just a kid and get dirty and get wet and have a blast with his friends. And we had taken him on Sunday. We get a call that Monday. Hi, this is Christina Deo from the Rosie O'Donnell Show. And I said, this isn't funny. I thought it was a friend of mine, Kathy Tabb, and she always said, we're going to get him on national television. And she said, no, this is Christina Deo. I'm with the Rosie Show, and we've seen this tape, and we really want to get Jared on the show. And I said, that's really special. I will tell him when he gets back from camp at the end of the week. And she said, oh gosh, we need him here tomorrow.
Oh no.
She said, it's the end of the season. We're wrapping up. And I said, I honestly can't promise you that he will leave camp. I know that sounds absurd, but he is 9. And
he lives for this.
That's what he lives for. He said, well, we talked about the logistics. He said, you know, she said, you call him and see what he thinks. I called, talked to the nurses and friends who were there as counselors. They got a hold of him. I said, we've got it worked out. If he wants to go, we will pick him up at camp, fly him out of Louisville. We'll go to New York from Louisville. That night, we'll do some stuff. You'll be on the show the next day. We can do a few more things, fly out, and you'll be back at camp before the campfire that night. And it was a wild 24 hours. He said, okay, as long as I can be back and I don't have to miss more than one night, I'm okay.
And this is 25 years ago. So yes, the technology and the way airlines and cell phones and computers, it wasn't like that then. It wasn't as easy as it is now. But when God wants you to move mountains, he's going to help you move mountains. And I'm telling you, Jared he's special, and he was blessed, and he's doing big things. He's doing God's plan all over and over again. And the fact that you got on national TV is not an accident. It's definitely a plan.
No,
and he's changed his life. So he has a joy cart, everybody, where you collect toys. Now, tell us about the toys. Tell us about the cart itself, so people know, because we're going to get into this later about Jared's bucket list. I really want to get into that. Jared's bucket list and how that has magnified and totally taken over UK campus and pediatrics nationwide. What would people expect if they saw the joy cart?
If you're at the Children's Hospital on a Tuesday evening, early evening, we have a team of volunteers who have been with us for years. They do not want to give up their post. Each volunteer gets a Tuesday of the month. So we have a group of volunteers. We have a cart. Each cart has a different age range so that we know exactly which rooms to go to. We have gifts anywhere from $10 to $20 gifts. And we also have gift cards for some family members or repeat visitors who could really use some help with Walmart cards, Amazon cards. Walmart cards are huge, especially with the teenagers. I always go with a cart into pediatric intensive care and then two of the other off-floor areas where the children are that are around the hospital. And we go to each room and we stop at the door. Every patient gets to pick a gift. And we even have some young adults because they're being treated in pediatric oncology as with pediatric protocols for cancer. So we see all ages. We see little bitty tiny ones all the way up. And the responses are incredible. Absolutely rarely in 25 years does any volunteer experience, oh, no thanks, that's not anything we need. Even the teenagers, if you hold up a set of Warhammer collector cards or you hold up a $20 Walmart card or an Amazon card or Google Play, that gets their attention. And we have musical toys, things for the little bitty ones. Sometimes we happen to, especially in intensive care, I will happen to walk past a room where they're doing a procedure, something, and the child is crying and crying. And I will, and the moms, dads, or whomever is usually standing outside the door, and I said, see if this helps. And they will walk in and show that little one, and it's quiet.
Well, and think about this, folks. Some of you may be thinking, why every week, right? Sometimes the children are there for many weeks, but the rotation of beds, the rotation of patients, maybe it's just to get them through a depression. Maybe it's to give them hope. And that's what this joy cart does. Right. And it's all ages, all spectrums. I mean, you're talking kids from the age of 0 to 18 that get to benefit from this. And Jared started this at age 9. And at age 13, what happens?
At age 13, the doctors had told us that there was really nothing else they could do. They had used every experimental procedure treatment known to man. They reached out to physicians across the nation to get ideas. And the first thing when the doctor came one night to speak with Jared about this, we waited until after Claire had gone to bed. And the doctor spoke to Jarrett and explained there was nothing else that they had in their bag of tricks. And it was the worst thing. It's just hard to explain. And what was even harder to fathom was the first thing out of his mouth was, I can't go. Claire needs me.
Oh, my gosh.
And that to this day, I mean, I get more than a lump in my throat. And he just kept saying, she's got to have my help. She needs me because of all of her challenges. And then he just got real quiet. And after the doctor left, the three of us just held on to each other and tried to get through that night. And then we picked back up and started the next morning.
And I think when you have something to live for, your timeline is always adjusted.
Absolutely.
He never gave up hope. He never gave up his drive. He never gave up his determination to help other people. Guys, this boy is 13 years old at this point and pricked and proned and sick and chemo and bone marrows and different hospitals, amputation of his leg.
Piece of his skull removed.
And never gave up the drive to do good for other people. If that doesn't give us a lesson to think about all day long, every day, about how grateful should we be every day for something.
Exactly. It puts things in perspective. It really does.
Talk to us about the bucket list that he gave after that.
In his last days, he met with his dear friend, the chaplain from the pediatric hospice unit, and he said, I want to write a list. You get a piece of paper, and I'll tell you what I want you to write down. And on his bucket list, there were several personal things that we won't share, but the biggest two were keep the joy cart going. This was our bucket list. Mm-hmm. And the other one was do something for the pediatric oncology clinic. It was at that time, many, many, many years ago, was a woefully ill-equipped place. It was in Kentucky Clinic. There was no privacy for the staff or for the patients. They were all crowded into one big room. There were not enough IV pumps. The nurses literally had to triage who was going to get the use of the IV pump when everybody got there in the morning. Some people came unexpectedly because they were spiking a fever and needed IV antibiotics, or their blood levels had dropped and they needed transfusions. You had kids there for their regular scheduled chemo, and it was successful because of the absolutely incredible team of nurses and doctors and staff who worked there and made it a fun place. The kids had a blast, but it was a really awful environment in terms of the physical environment.
And so, at that age, going to a hospital that's not your bed, doesn't have your pillows, a mom's smell, the home smell. I mean, it's a scary place, and yet there was joy.
They always, and to this day, we stay committed and very involved at Kentucky Children's Hospital. And to think that kids look forward to going to the clinic to get their chemo, because everybody there is so sweet and so fun and so wonderful, and even the parents appreciate the support. Mm-hmm. It's hard to fathom, but it's true.
Well, and Children's Hospital today, if anyone needs care for their child, Children's Hospital in the state of Kentucky is by far the best. Would you agree?
Kentucky Children's Hospital is in the top 10 in the nation in many areas now. It is an absolutely incredible, incredible environment with skilled care levels that level one trauma center, the emergency room, all the way up to the floor. It's amazing.
And the hospital today is just absolutely beautiful with the whole transformation. I know with the Women's You Care philanthropy group that I'm in, we toured the children's hospital, and it's beautiful, and it should be for the children and the Markey Center, and now we have the Chandler Center, and everything's really magnified in the last 25 years. But to do something to help pediatrics oncology, that was his wish.
Yes.
He had the help of the hospice chaplain to help him figure out this bucket list. What was the first thing that you guys did that led into the next thing that you did?
The first thing we did, in lieu of flowers, we obviously said, a friend of mine we met through this process happened to work in the University of Kentucky Philanthropy Department, and this was just a thing she was doing on the side. She said, what if we set up a separate fund, not the Jarrett's Joy Cart Fund, but a Jarrett Minear Fund to raise money to donate towards pediatric oncology? And maybe you can, traditionally, out of a memorial fund like that, you may get $5,000, something like that.
It's kind of like what today we say, GoFund.
Exactly.
Except it's the Jarrett Minear
Fund. Jarrett Minear Fund,
and it's the first private funding that was set up.
For the clinic, the entire of Kentucky Clinic had not had any kind of private funding to do anything to build or renovate a clinic, expand a clinic. So with that, and with his national exposure, international exposure on national television and radio, print media, everything, and through other organizations joining with us, I spoke at groups around the city and clubs. We raised over $800,000 and were able to build out a new clinic that was much, much better. It did not take long for that to get outgrown, unfortunately. The space is at a premium at UK Hospital, unfortunately. And Suzanne and I, after that was over, I just kept saying, something else has to come up here. This has to be sustainable. They need some kind of a fund that is going to help them long term.
And what came to your mind with that? What did Jared say to you?
He always said, what else are you going to do?
And what else?
And I always have people interview and they say, what would Jared say? And I always tell him, he would say, what else are you going to do? What now? And it so happened that once again, things fell into place. The friend of mine that was working with me, Susanna Dedemy, had been speaking to her daughter about the efforts and the success of this project we were working on. Her daughter happened to be at Penn State and had just signed up to participate in THON, THON, which is the largest student-run philanthropy in the world, and it benefits Hershey Medical Center's pediatric oncology program. And it was started in memory of an oncology patient, pediatric oncology patient. Back in the day, we couldn't send a video or anything else online. You had to send a disc through the mail. We looked at it, and Susanna was talking to me about it. Initially, Susanna said, I've got this thing I want to tell you about. Let's meet for coffee. And so we met at Starbucks. Two things came to mind. You know, the little cardboard bands that they put around the coffee cups. At one point, they had sayings on them, and the saying Susanna got on her cup, and this was before we'd even talked about this, was always remember to dance. And she still has that to this day.
Oh, I got
and
goosebumps.
The other thing was, okay, that cup of coffee back in 1999, when I went down the hall at Markey during Jared's transplant and came back with my coffee, and he said, I've been thinking, that turned into the Jared's Joy cart. This time it turned into Dance Blue.
And so everybody,
yes,
Dance Blue, which if anybody's at UK, has a child at UK, is an alumni of UK, has been on campus, everybody knows what Dance Blue is. But did anybody know that it started with Jarrett?
Oh,
so many people don't, and we get to share that.
It's incredible.
Incredible. So Dance Blue is a marathon dancing with all the kids. And I love how you guys made that for everybody, just the way Jarrett would have wanted it, not the clicks. Talk about it. Talk
Absolutely.
About how Dance Blue got evolved.
Susanna Dedemy and I decided, let's just meet with some of the administrators in the department that teaches leadership classes, those kinds of things, that kind of interest level, those students. And we had interviews. A student came forth, then Emily Pfeiffer, mm-hmm. Now Emily Euler, and she said, this is exactly what I've been looking for. But we had open meetings with Panalytic Council, student government, the student volunteer organizations, and we even had an open meeting in the student center thinking, what students are going to come talk to a couple of ladies standing here? But we put out there about Jarrett. People came and said, I knew him or I saw him on television. I heard about his story. I want to be a part of something yep. different at UK. Never looked back. In 2006, the completely student-led Dance Blue started. There were 171 dancers who were committed to raising money and staying at Memorial Coliseum on their feet for 24 hours. Some of the members of the committees and things volunteered in the clinic to interact with play with the kids, have events for the families. That has mushroomed. We just finished year 19 back in early April. Would we have 839 dancers?
Wow.
These students raise money for the entire year. The leadership works the entire year. There is a team of almost 200 students, be from the overall chair, the board that works. Every committee has an overall chair. There are coordinators there. This year, there were 180 committee members. They work all year to make this happen. Organizations all the way to individuals. It was important to me and to others that everybody have a chance to participate. And what's really interesting now is we have active treatment students and students who were formerly pediatric oncology patients who are at UK and participate in Dance Blue.
Now, I want everybody to know too, so what's next is always, sure, you're right, what you're thinking about, because Jared's still in the back of your mind pushing you. 2006, you have 171 dancers. 2024, 19 years later, you have 839. And we were talking with Caitlin, our director of ops, and she knew about it. She's like, the biggest regret I had was not getting involved in Dance Blue before I was a senior, because people work on this all year, and yes, you guys raised over $2 million this year alone.
Yes. The students are absolutely, it's hard to find the adjective to describe them. They are tenacious. They keep focused on the kids, focused on what is going to help them. This is not something you check off your list. For the vast majority of these students, this is what they look forward to being a part of. It's not a resume builder. It is actually...
Oh, it's a character builder.
It is a character builder. The really exciting thing is now, with all of the mini marathons, there are something like 45, 46 mini marathons across the entire state, which includes even Jessamine Early Learning Village. Wow. We have 4 and 5 year olds dancing, and we have all elementary, middle school, high schoolers all across the state. And all of those students are helped by students from UK who are, there's an entire mini marathon committee, and they help coach these schools and the students. The beautiful thing is that, and yes, the money is amazing. In 19 years, over $24 million has been raised.
Amazing.
The other thing that has been raised, which is absolutely my thing, is that the thousands of leaders have been raised through this. Thousands of leaders have been cultivated. Thousands of people who know what it feels like to give back, who know what it feels like to put something out there and then not expect something in return, but they want to be game changers. They want to be world changers. And over these years, the thousands of students, we now, pediatric oncology, with the team of physicians that they have, specialists in all the different areas of pediatric oncology, the nursing staff, the other staff involved, all of the programs that are provided or were started thanks to Dance Blue, we are now one of the top 5 programs for its size in the entire nation.
And not only that, I mean, first of all, what a feat, what an accomplishment. It's a momentum, it's not stopping. But you've been able to, through this, be able to transform pediatric oncology in the entire state. We're now, what, the top 5 program in size in the nation?
Yep. For our number of patients treated, yes. And the research coming out thanks to this program. We even have, within the department, Dance Blue has funded a financial advisor for the families to help them. Many of these families are just barely struggling. And, you know, we were in a situation 33 years ago. We were comfortable financially, but we were averaging $11,000 to $12,000 a year out of pocket with private insurance. A lot of these families do not have those kind of benefits. They're already on government assistance. This happens, and you've got a catastrophe waiting to happen. People lose their jobs. It doesn't matter what the laws say. People are losing their jobs. They lose their homes. They're food insecure. We have a lot of things. So we have now, the students have been able to help provide programs for gas cards. Some of these families can't even get there to the clinic. They don't have money for gas. Some of the families, when they get there, if they decided to use their money to pay for gas for the car to get there, they can't afford to eat. So we have food voucher cards. We have a financial advisor who is meeting with people, helping them navigate through the system to get what assistance they can, and also teaching them money management, those kinds of things. We have a nutritional specialist to help them figure out how to feed the kids to make sure they're getting the best bang they can out of what foods the kids can tolerate. We have in-house child life specialists who are in that department working directly with the kids. We have two educational intervention specialists who work directly between the schools and the school system that the kids are coming from and the teachers, educating them on what to look for when the kids go back into the classroom. A lot of them are going to have some learning challenges. They're going to have some behavioral challenges. They also, these professionals advocate at the state level. They also advocate to make sure that these children are being kept up as much as they can with their schoolwork, those kinds of things. And I could go on, but I won't.
So think about this too, everybody. Children's Hospital, which is right here in Central Kentucky in Lexington. We're so blessed. We have over 14 hospitals right here in Lexington. Children's Hospital has now formed a consortium of hospitals with Cincinnati Cardiology, with the Rainbow and Bays in Columbus. There's a pediatric obesity portion. There's a pediatric sleep clinic. There's a whole mirage of health issues that come out of sleep and obesity, and they've done that. They've also, in the last 5 years, there's been such amazing leadership and the commitment of the physicians and the cooperation of people across the nation to bring the awareness, to bring the cutting edge that we need, that we're now ranked up in either one, two, or at least the top three of pediatric brain cancer. We're one of the leaders in renal cancer, pediatric renal cancer. And this all helped and got nourished and built on by a 9-year-old boy that had a dream to give back so that he could feel better by starting a joy cart. What are we doing on a daily basis just to touch one life, let alone thousands of lives on a daily basis, like this little 9-year-old boy did? I mean, every parent's dream is to watch their child grow into their dream. And yet Jared left you his dream to continue.
Yes, it's something we do not take lightly. We know it is
a huge responsibility.
Yes, it is a responsibility. We're not looking to suppress our grief, anything like that. That is not the case at all. What the case is it's not about Jared's life. It's about that dream that he wanted other kids to have a better life, to have better opportunities if they were facing cancer, even the kids with other issues, to have them have something to look forward to.
I want to share with everybody how they can get involved, how they can donate. And of course, I would definitely want to share, we have your huge event, your 25th anniversary of this, start in May 18th. It's going to be at the Longship Room there at UK Football Stadium at Kroger Field.
Yes.
How do they get involved? How can they participate? Where do we send them?
Well, one of the things you can do, we do have a Facebook page, Jarrett's, J-A-R-R-E-T-T, apostrophe S, Jarrett's Joy Cart dash Central KY. We are on Facebook. You can make donations through there. We have a website, thejoycart.com. You can contact me, Jennifer Minear, at thejoycart@gmail.com. And we are always taking financial donations. We are doing quite well with toy donations right now, unless you would like to host a baby shower or have some ideas for teenage items. We also, besides those Tuesday night visits, we have just completed a $125,000 endowment to support a sibling support program in the palliative care program at Kentucky Children's Hospital. We know what that's like firsthand, to have siblings who are facing the unexpected loss of a brother or sister or unexpected catastrophic injury, illness, that kind of thing. We also have supported financially some STEM activities in the Child Life Activity Center there. We provide all the arts and crafts in the pediatric oncology clinic. We provide end of chemo party bags where the kids get, when they finish all of their chemo and they get to ring the bell in the clinic. We have gift cards for pizza with decorations, all kinds of good things for them to celebrate accordingly, and many, many other things that we provide for all the different departments.
So we are going to put all of that information, phone numbers, emails, websites, copies of the invitation to get involved on the anniversary, how you can get involved with the Joy Cart, how you can get involved with the Holiday Store, how you can get involved in Dance Blue, all of it. And then we're also going to give you a link to read Marvin Barlett's book about the boy who delivered joy, which is all about Jarrett. We could keep going on and on about this. It's such an amazing story. And I know everybody out there, some way your heart had to be touched. If not, I don't think you have any feelings at all. Yeah. But what a great story. And let's all be a part of how we can give back and keep this bucket list of wish continuing so that we can be the difference in someone's life.
Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. No, thank you. Thank you. We had a whole box of tissues here because, I mean, what a heartfelt story, and God gave you big shoes to fill. Sometimes I wonder about mine, and when I look at yours, I think he gave you everything you needed to be as amazing as you are.
Thank you so much.
So listen here, everybody. If you want to know more about Jarrett's Joy Cart or getting involved in Dance Blue or how you can make a difference in the battle and the fight for cancer, which is has absolutely no discrimination on any of us. And as you heard from Jennifer, in a split second, your world can change. So every day counts. Every day matters. We all get 24 hours, 7 days a week. Some people just get more days than others. So be the difference, be the light, offer hope, and do good. And remember, ask yourself, what's next? So for all of you out there, thank you so much for listening to us today at Let's Connect. It's been an absolute honor and a privilege to hear your story, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.
I wish Doug was here, but I can't wait to meet him in May. And for all of you out there, when you're ready to buy, sell, build, or invest, just ask Malia. Well, that wraps up another great podcast. Thank you so much for joining us at the Just Ask Malia's podcast series. It's always a pleasure to help the local and future residents of Kentucky make smart real estate decisions. And we love connecting you to our community. And that's why we do this. So be sure to subscribe to our podcast series. Make sure your friends and family know all about it. Tag, like us, find us on Facebook, social media. And remember, when you're ready to buy, sell, build, or invest, I'm your girl, Just Ask Malia.